Erios Perk Base, Mishnah Zion 2:7, Shlosha Devarim Amru Lifnei Rabbi Akiva. These three things were said in the presence of Rabbi Akiva, Shnai Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, two of them in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, who was Rabbi Akiva's teacher who came from Beis Shammai, Ve'echad Mishum Rabbi Yeshua, and one in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, who was also Rabbi Akiva's teacher. He was from the side of Beis Hillel. They were the Gedolei Hador. Shnai Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, the two that were said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. First of all, that Yotzes Isha Be'ir Shel Zahav, that a woman may go out on Shabbos wearing her piece of jewelry known as the Ir Shel Zahav, the Golden City. This is a Mishnah in Shabbos. The idea is, the issue is, that one may not carry in Rishus HaRab, in a public domain, even for Amos, which is a violation of Shabbos, of course. And the concern is that while one may wear clothing, because clothing are considered to be like subordinate to the body, and similarly one may wear tachshitim, jewelry, adornments to the body, like jewelry, for the same reason, the rabbis generally forbade women from wearing jewelry in public. The concern is they would take their jewelry off to show their friends, and while in their hands, it would no longer be subordinate to their bodies. They would transfer it to Amos for Amos in the public domain. That would be a violation of Shabbos, and therefore they said no jewelry in public. The thought here is that an exception to the rule should be the Ir Shel Zahav. This particular piece of jewelry is kind of like a headband or a crown made out of gold. It was large and heavy and had a depiction of like a skyline like Jerusalem. And the idea is that only a very wealthy and, you know, chashuvah, like dignified woman, would own such a expensive piece of jewelry. And such a woman would never take her jewelry off in public to show it to her friends, because that's sort of undignified, and therefore there's no reason to make a decree that would include the Ir Shel Zahav jewelry from prohibiting it from being worn in public. That is the thought. That's what the Mishnah says here. As a matter of halacha, the Chacham didn't accept that, meaning that according to the books, a woman may not wear Ir Shel Zahav, even if she's rich and chashuva and prominent and dignified, because we're concerned that women might take something off and then carry in the Shasarab. All that said, notwithstanding the fact that it seems black and white, women may not wear jewelry in public. The custom of Jewish women for a very long time has been to, yes, in fact, wear jewelry in public. And lots of ink has been spilled to try to rationalize that. But that's certainly the prevalent custom today, and therefore the accepted custom. Now, the next is Umafriche Yonim Psum Eidus. The people who chase birds, pigeons, or doves, they are psulim le'edus, they are invalid to be witnesses in a bezdin. We've actually seen this topic twice before, both in Rosh Hashanah as well as in Sanhedrin. They're called pshatim, what the picture is here. Either it means people who race birds, like how they race horses today, so they're gamblers. Another pshat is that it's people who essentially train their birds to lure away their neighbor's birds from their neighbor's dovecote, where they're, you know, cultivating, you know, rearing these birds, and that's kind of like theft. So that, let me talk about each one in turn. As far as the gambling goes, so gambling is a iser derabbanan in terms of, I should say that more precisely, gamblers are prohibited midrabbanan from serving as witnesses. Midoraisa, you have to be a gazlan, a thief, to be pasul edus, or a rasha in general. Any kind of, you know, person does things that constantly make them a rasha, including being a thief. Gambling is not really thievery, but it's like a thievery light, if you will. It's quasi-thievery. Either, but basically because the person who loses doesn't expect to pay, so although he's paying, he doesn't really want to pay, sort of being, he's being expropriated kind of against his will, so it's kind of like theft. The other approach why gamblers are pasul edus midrabban is that the rabbi said that people who are gamblers essentially are not osek bi yeshuvo shel olam, they're not involved in the general economy and civilization and advancement of society and the economy. And that being the case, the concern is the sort of outsiders who don't really give a darn what happens to everyone else, and they're sort of outside the purview of normal customs, therefore they can't be used as witnesses. The latter approach, which is how it's codified, has a big nafkamina, which is someone who is a gambler, but only a part-time gambler with their regular job. Let's say they work during the week and just gambles on the weekends. So that guy is osek bi yeshuvo shel olam. Of course, during the week, he's a dentist, so he does something for society. Even on the weekends, he's a gambler, racing birds. So that guy would be kasher leidus. The other approach of chasing you know, training one's bird to chase his neighbor's or lure his neighbor's birds out of their dovecote. The idea is, back in the time of the Mishnah, raising birds was big business. You wanted those birds for the eggs, for the fertilizer, as messenger pigeons, for korbanos, for meat. So how do you get birds? Essentially, you put out food and they come. So technically speaking, legally speaking, the birds that are roosting in your backyard in your big bird hotel are not legally yours, right? They're just like sort of wild birds that have come to roost in your backyard because you put food out for them. So if someone lures them away from you, they're not technically stealing your birds because they're not really your birds. But notwithstanding, Chazal said, listen, this is just a recipe for very bad neighborly behavior. We want dark, because of mipnei darchei shalom, for the sake of promoting peace. We said people may not do that, may not sort of essentially lure away their neighbor's birds, because it's just to make fighting, and people who do that are punished, essentially, that they are considered to be bad guys, pasul le'edus. Okay, fine, that is lahalacha. Both those are brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Now, the Echad Mishum Rabbi Yeshua, the third issue that was said before Rabbi Kiva was the name of Rabbi Yeshua. That was Hasheretz Bifi Chulda Umehaleches Al Gabi HaKikaro Shel Truma. If you have a situation, I'll translate, then I'll explain afterwards. You have a Sheretz. A Sheretz is one of the eight small creatures that the Sukkim and Vayikra enumerate, that when they are dead, they convey tumah through direct contact. Okay, the identity of these eight is not clear, but they're referred to as the Shmona Sharatzim, these eight Sharatzim. So if you have one of these dead Sharatzim, like a dead mouse, Bifi Chulda, that's in the mouth of a weasel actually, which is a Sharatz in its own right, but the point is this weasel is alive, so it can't convey tumah, but in its mouth, because the weasel is a predator, is a dead mouse. The dead mouse, or whatever, dead whatever Sharatz. So the dead mouse certainly is a source of tumah, but only conveys Sharatzim, only convey tumah through direct contact. And you have this weasel with a dead mouse in its mouth, Mehalechas al gabi kikara shel truma. It's walking on loaves of bread, which are truma bread. So now, if the mouse touched the loaf of bread, the bread is tamei, certainly, and can't be eaten, has to be burned. But who said it was? We don't know. It's a question mark. It's a suffix. We don't know if the mouse, which is dead, came into direct contact with the truma. We don't know. So says the Mishnah, suffik naga, suffik lo naga, if we just don't know whether or not it had direct contact, sveiko tahor, we rule that all of the loaves of bread are in fact tahor, they could be eaten by a kohen, no problem. So there is like the usual rule that if you have a suffik, an uncertain situation regarding the spread of tumah, the general rule is that suffik tumah bereshus harabim, if the question arises in a public domain, we actually had this early in the Masechta, if it raises in a public domain here, public means the place where people are frequenting, you know, three people or more frequenting, so that's called a public domain, and then we say, because it's in public, we say sfeiko tahor, it's going to be tahor, and if it's safek tumah bereshus hayachid, if the question arises in a private domain, meaning where there aren't three people frequenting usually, so then it's going to be ruled to be tummy. So that's the general rule that governs most of these cases of suffix tumah. But there's like a superordinate rule, a rule that overrides it, if you will. That's, there are a couple actually, but the one the Mishnah here says over here is that even if you're talking about Rishus HaYachid, where Sveiko tummy, we rule strictly usually, if you have a situation where the tumah source never was at rest, it was in movement the whole time, which would be the case if you're talking about a rat or a mouse that's dead inside the mouth of this walking weasel. So the weasel is on the move, and therefore the dead source of tumah in its mouth is on the move. It is mehalechet, is on the move, and not nach, not at rest. And the rule is that if the tumah never came to rest, then we assume that direct contact did not happen, and the safek will be ruled tahor. And that's the first, third case of the mission, which also would be lahalacha.